I'm Dr. Deborah Drake, and I'm here with Professor Rhys Walters. We are both criminologists at the Open University, and today I'm interviewing Rhys about an innovative area of critical criminology, that of green criminology. So, Rhys, I'd like to start by asking you, what is green criminology, and how did it come about?
It's an evolving and very exciting area for me of criminology that has its founding principles pretty much identified by Piers Byrne and Nigel South, who are two leading figures who have identified it as, quote, those harms against humanity, against the environment, including space, and against non-human animals committed by powerful organisations. So harms committed by governments, transnational corporations, military apparatuses, and so on, against ordinary people, as well as by ordinary people. So it's a broad definition that's acknowledging, you know, both governmental understandings of individual responsibility, but is also capable of focusing on primary attention on acts of the powerful in causing sort of widespread and long-lasting environmental damage. Where did it come about in terms of its coining and so forth? I mean, it was first coined as a phrase in print by the American criminologist Michael Lynch. And in 1990, he used the term in a published article as a way of harnessing green environmentalism and green political theories, you know, to examine things like environmental destruction as an outcome of modern capitalism. But it was really Nigel South, professor of sociology at the University of Essex, who began using the term many years before that in the late 70s and indeed throughout the 1980s when he was speaking at conferences and bringing the whole issue of environmentalism to the criminological landscape.
So why did criminology and the likes of Nigel South start to take an interest in environmental matters?
I think very much shaped by the contexts at the time. I mean, the early 1980s and indeed the late 1970s saw a proliferation of nuclear weapons, and this combined with the ongoing Cold War provided a discussion around the dangers of nuclear energy, nuclear war, the extinction of the planet. And the UN began to pass resolutions about nuclear weapons, about chemicals that we use to make weapons and energy, and criminologists began to take an interest in these sorts of issues. I mean, we saw in 1983, Professor Richard Harding from Australia published in the ANZ Journal of Criminology a piece about nuclearism and criminology. You know, he was asking very broad, searching questions such as, you know, what does criminology have to say about issues that threaten the extinction of our planet, and what can criminologists do about it? Big questions, and as a result, we saw a flurry of some published work, notably about toxic chemicals, contamination of water, contamination of soil, food, and the impacts on both human and non-human species. So issues about pollution and deforestation, habitat and species decline sort of followed on as a sort of environmental consciousness became part of criminological concern.
So were there any noticeable crimes or events that galvanised or inspired green criminological scholarship?
There are. I mean, in addition to the debates about the dangers associated with nuclear technologies, there are probably three that stand out for me, notably Love Canal, Bhopal and the Rainbow Warrior, that all occurred around 1978 to 1984. I mean, the first involved the dumping of toxic waste. In 1978 to 80 in Love Canal near Niagara Falls in the United States, it emerged that a chemical company named Hooker Chemicals had disposed of thousands of drums of toxic chemicals into a shallow canal and covered it with soil and grass. And they had sold this land to the Niagara Falls Board of Education. And as a result, a school was built on the site, developers moved in, houses were built, an entire community was established over this toxic dump. And over the years, there was evidence of birth defects, significant skin diseases, deformities and cancers emerged in the people, you know, living in this area. And at the time, the United States Environment Protection Agency found that there were some 88 different toxic chemicals, you know, in the backyards of people's homes. And they concluded that, you know, 80% of all lethal chemicals in the US at that particular time, around the early 1980s, were being disposed of illegally. And that raised not only a public scare, but an area that was very important for political intervention.
And you said the second one involved Bhopal in India?
Yeah, the tragic disaster that occurred in southern India in 1984, where a poisonous gas leak from the Union Carbide pesticide factory instantly killed 2,000 people when that factory exploded in the middle of the night. And then a further 200,000 were subsequently affected over the coming months and years. And in addition, there were thousands of animals that were killed, soils and drinking water contaminated, and an entire community of 250,000 people were dislocated. It was a complete and utter disaster. And it revealed how this American company had gone abroad to make pesticide using cheap labour and reduce costs, and doing so ignoring a whole host of health and safety standards. And today, the Chief Executive Officer, Warren Anderson, remains unaccounted for this action, even though the Supreme Court of India have issued warrants for his arrest. He's never been brought to justice, even though we know that he lives a long and healthy life in Long Island in New York. The third one really is something a little different, I think, in terms of an event that galvanised or inspired criminological scholarship in the area of green crime, and that was the sinking of the Rainbow Warrior in New Zealand in 1984. This was a ship that was owned and operated by Greenpeace. And Greenpeace at that particular time had become something of a thorn in the side of the powerful nuclear nations and had gathered sort of significant international exposure for their opposition to the ways in which nuclear resources were being used. And their vessel, the Rainbow Warrior, became the target of an espionage operation involving secret agents from France who bombed the vessel. And it demonstrated how eco-warriors, those who were opposed to powerful nations and companies that threatened the environment, they themselves had become targets. People, ordinary citizens who protested were seen as a threat, which I think raised a lot of public awareness about issues these protesters were standing up for. If a secret service is travelling from France to New Zealand to blow up a protest ship, then why? And what's this whole environmental movement about? I mean, people began to take note and they got involved. So, you know, they were three very, very big issues that galvanised public consciousness, but also academics around a new area, and criminology became involved.